This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Politicians and bankers, businessmen, they religiously tell you the economy needs to keep on growing with more products and profits for all. Any sane person can see there are limits to growth on a single planet. As wildlife goes extinct, food chains break up, the climate spins out, we have already surpassed those limits. Even a steady-state economy, steady as we are now, would crush the biosphere we depend on. The only and obvious answer has to be contraction until we reach a sustainable plateau, and that's the territory of Frank Rotering. He's the independent thinker from British Columbia, Canada, and lord of the website contractionism.org. Frank has two books out, including Needs and Limits, A New Economics for Sustainable Well-Being. Prepare to have your basic ideas challenged, listeners. Frank Rotering, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. Glad to be here.
Well, before we trash Naomi Klein, the progressive movement, and most of our friends, why don't we establish the basic tenets of your thinking? How would you describe our current rack of problems?
Well, I think you've described them accurately. I think you catch the central tenet of what I'm saying, and that is that the only way we can, concerned humankind, can resolve this crisis we're facing is by rapidly contracting the world's rich economies. Perhaps not all economies, but certainly the rich countries, Canada, the U.S., much of Europe, they have to contract quite dramatically. Again, and as you say, a steady state economy, which was a big topic a few years ago, is simply not sufficient. Rapid contraction is the only way out of this dilemma we're facing currently.
So many people assume we can tinker with the market system. We'll get fossil-free energy and efficiency and recycle things and go on as we are. Why won't that work?
Well, first of all, it's not a market system. I think that's a mystification, Alex. The word is capitalism. Markets can be quite useful beyond capitalism, as I'll discuss as we proceed. So let's not mystify things, okay? The issue here is capitalist logic, the capitalist class, and its growth compulsion, okay? So not markets.
Why can't we just tinker with things the way they are now, with clean energy and recycling and...
Well, it's simply insufficient. I mean, those are efficiency solutions, and efficiency is definitely required. What is primarily required is reduction in consumption and, in long-run, population. Efficiencies help us slow down the degradation of the environment, but that degradation will proceed, again, unless we rapidly contract our economies. So it's not either or, it's both that are required. And the other thing to say here is that increasing efficiency and tinkering, as you say, with this system is well within the logic of capitalism and is quite acceptable to the ruling class here. But reducing population and particularly consumption, those things are taboo because that goes counter to the system's core logic, which is to expand. So if we counter that core logic, then we're heading into revolutionary territory, you know, transformative political change, which is what my strategy is all about.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't one of the essences of capitalism the idea that interest will increase the amount of capital? And so that right in that economic model is always the idea of expansion.
Yeah, I don't think interest is the core. I think that's a monetary explanation. I think Marx had a better explanation. I won't get into that in the time we have. In fact, you can understand it historically. I mean, why did capitalism arise in the 16th century? Well, I think the most compelling reason is that the prior economic system in Europe, feudalism, was steady state at a very low level of productivity and production. And there was a need, I think, to expand that. Certainly, some sectors of society felt that very strongly, that we needed more production. And capitalism really arose out of that need or perceived need. So capitalism has built within it this dynamic to grow. And as its logic has evolved over the centuries, that has become an intrinsic, inherent part of the system. And there's no way to tinker our way out of that. We have to historically supersede this growth-dependent system.
You talk about a capitalist class. If I have a pension invested in stocks or savings in a bank, Am I not willy-nilly a member of this capitalist class?
No, you're certainly not. You're sucking at the trough. You're at the teat, but you are not a controller, an owner. You are not in power. No, by no means are you a member of the capitalist class if you simply siphon off a few dollars through a pension or other means. Absolutely not.
Now, you mentioned Karl Marx, and I can't avoid a comparison to some of your writing and that of Karl Marx, who was really the founder of communism, we might say, or at least of socialism. Where are you the same and where different? And I realize that's, you could probably write a book about that alone, but can you give us a couple of pointers?
Yeah, well, I'm an admirer of Karl Marx intellectually. I do subscribe to his analysis of capitalism, and I use some of his analysis, in fact, to explain why a capitalist economy must grow. For the rest, however, I certainly am not a Marxist. I disagree strongly with Marxist productivism. In other words, progress is equal to increased economic production. I disagree with Marx's notion of human nature, which is based solely on social and not biological realities. I don't subscribe to much of Marx's revolutionary or historical theories, but his understanding of capitalism, I think, was unsurpassed.
But have you not called for a need for a revolution?
My strategy, which is now waning, by the way, one of the things I'd like to talk about, my initial strategy in the rich capitalist countries was called contractionary revolution. And that was indeed, as you indicate, a bottom-up Marxist-style revolution. Of course, the socialist model is that the working class overthrows the capitalist class. And I think to some degree unconsciously borrowed that model and felt that progressive elements in society and some conservative elements might be able to ally, especially as ecological degradation became more acute and visible, and overthrow the capitalist class in the standard socialist sense. And that, I felt for a long time, felt that was weak and perhaps untenable because of the time constraints, the complexity of building such a movement, etc. I basically held on to that model until I read Naomi Klein's new book. A good friend of mine here said or felt that Klein was moving towards a revolutionary position. And I thought if that is indeed true, then perhaps there is hope for progressivism in this vein, a revolutionary vein, and perhaps this strategy of mine can work. I've since read her book about a week ago, and it's very, very clear that Naomi Klein is not and will never be a revolutionary. And insofar as she is a influential leader of the progressive movement, it's also clear that progressivism will not be revolutionary. So with that pretty well pinned down, I now am searching for and developing a new strategy. I think a contractionary revolution can still work in some countries on the planet, perhaps the poor countries with a revolutionary background, with a more mature, politically mature working class and populace. In the rich countries, progressives, I think, have been socially controlled by the capitalists. The populace certainly is under complete social control. I can't conceive of a revolutionary way out of this. So I think for the rich countries, my former strategy is not workable in the time available to us ecologically.
Well, you know, one thing that Greens don't like to talk about too much is that there is a trend where some green groups are funded by foundations, and those foundations got their money from capitalists who made lots of money, and then perhaps the next generation felt badly about it and wants to pass it around and make some changes. But there's always constraints, you know. Don't be too radical. Find us some solutions the way they are now. Do you see that as a problem?
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's the core problem with environmentalism and now progressivism, is that these movements were initiated and developed to work within the boundaries of the current system. And they can do fine work within that, achieving social justice and, you know, moving towards a greener economy. These are good things, but they are limited things. And the ecological crisis is an extreme, urgent, existential crisis requiring fundamental transformative change. And yeah, if you take your money from the people making the big bucks, then there's no way you can be independent, no way you can make a solid contribution to overcoming our overshoot.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, talking with my guest, Frank Rotering from British Columbia. Frank, I'm trying to picture a campaign slogan, "If I am elected, you will all make do with less." What kind of political system can oversee a contraction of the economy?
I don't think an election is going to do it, Alex. I think most of us are under the what I call the democratic illusion that the government holds power and that the populace, people as a whole, have sovereignty to do what they want, basically, through government. I think that's a myth, okay? I think we ought to take seriously the proposition, the Marxist proposition, that, you know, the capitalist class dominates this society and rules. So if you elect a contractionary government or a green government, you can do certain things in the policy realm, but you can't fundamentally transform this economy. You will be harassed, you will be overthrown, and you'll be assassinated. This is simply not realistic. Okay, so your premise there of an election, I think, is naive, to be honest with you. So I can't answer the question. I think the premise is invalid.
Good enough. Well, I'm having trouble even picturing what contraction would look like. I've only grown up with growth all my life. What would it be like to live in a time of a big contraction?
It would be painful. It would be painful because there is a strong element of human nature involved here. We all like expansion because, you know, we have some strong natural tendencies, I hate to say it, to want more. You know, an easy life is better than a hard life for most people. And this is quite natural. So we, as a species, especially in the rich countries, where, of course, we're spoiled rotten, we will have to make do with a lower standard of living as currently perceived. We're going to have to go back to some, you know, social entertainments, to, you know, a cheaper way of doing things, far less travel, obviously, far less, consumption generally. So it will be a difficult transition. There's no way to downplay that. But again, if it's done in a revolutionary context, if society as a whole is changing, and this is accepted from the top, the media talks about this, artists express this, and it is a common theme for people, then it will not be that difficult. Okay, but it will be going against the grain of human nature to some degree. So it'll be a difficult but exciting period.
What about the poorer people in the developing world? Won't they be cheated out of a healthier society, better food, medical care, and all that? Can we really demand peasants stall out at their current level?
If you hold to the capitalist model of development, the productivist model of development, that more outputs means a better, healthier society, then yes, but I think that model is not valid. Okay, I think every society must undergo its own inherent indigenous mode of development. In some cases, that might mean more outputs, but in many cases, it will not. It's quite clear from all the research we've seen that more outputs don't produce happier people. This is pretty clear by now. I think that is a capitalist myth, that we have to keep growing for the poor people of this world. I don't believe that's true, okay? I think every society has to develop in its own way, and in many cases that will not require more outputs, hence growth.
Well, we've talked about the possible painful nature of degrowth, as others call it, but there are also people who argue if we just leave things the way they are, we're going to slam into a depression anyway for economic reasons, for ecological reasons, for a lot of reasons, perhaps overpopulation as well. So is there a way that we can plan our descent?
Well, we have to plan our descent, but the question is, who is we here? First of all, the degrowth movement, by the way, I'm very suspicious of. I've read their materials and their website stuff, etc. Nobody can even define what the word degrowth means, okay? For some it means contraction, for some it means we shouldn't be worried about growth, positive or negative. It's a very fuzzy movement that's sort of on the fringes of the ecological economics movement. So I have deep suspicions about degrowth. It seems to me it's just academic game playing and attending conferences. I see nothing coming out of that strategically that is useful. Will there be a depression anyway? Could be, but that really doesn't matter. We're trying to transform the economy here. So what happens under capitalist guidance really doesn't interest me. We're trying to change things. Can we plan? Well, again, in a post-revolutionary situation, okay, if contractionists, as I call them, are in control, then clearly, yes, this will be a planned move. I think the implication of your question is, and the degrowth people would say implicitly, can we, society as a whole, under capitalism, plan our descent? And the answer is no. Under capitalism, you cannot do so. It's a growth-dependent system, as you indicate, as I assert, as Naomi Klein asserts. So you can't plan for that under capitalism. It has to be in a post-capitalist environment. And I think that your next question should be, okay, Frank, what is your current strategy for that? Because I think that's the key here. Let me make a general comment before going on here, Alex. I think all of us, you know, you with your radio show and people like Naomi Klein and others, should start talking not about, you know, speculations about the future and not about how deep our problems are, but I think we all have to start talking almost constantly about a strategy for getting out of this. Okay, what is the proper strategy? What happens to power? What happens to capitalism? Who is we? What are the social divisions? Who is going to rise up against whom to do what? These are the fundamental questions I'm trying to address with my work. And in thinking strategically, I have come to an impasse here because of the limits of progressivism. And I do have a new strategy that's currently unfolding in my head, and I'll be writing about that in a new book out next year. And it's called A Conservative Revolt. And it's quite different. It is not revolutionary, as I've been speaking. It is not revolutionary. It's a revolt. And I'd like to spend our remaining time, if you're okay with it, discussing this new theory and inviting your listeners to critique it. Okay? I'm looking for constructive criticism. Tell me where I'm wrong in this non-revolutionary strategy. Are you okay with that?
I would love to do that. Let's do it.
Okay. So just to recap what I said earlier, my initial strategy, again, for the rich capitalist countries was what I called contractionary revolution, which was basically progressive and some conservative elements allying and then revolting against the capitalist class. I called those revolutionaries contractionists, and I called the capitalist class expansionists for obvious reasons. Again, I don't believe at this stage that this can work. Again, the main reason there is that Naomi Klein's book has made it very, very clear that she, and by extension, progressivism generally, is not revolutionary and will never be in my lifetime or in the ecological time we have. So a new strategy is required. What is that? What could it possibly be? So if the impetus for fundamental change is not coming from below, from progressives, environmentalists, workers, indigenous people, youth, religious people, okay, the people not in control of the society, if they will not rise up, as I believe they will not, then the solution must lie at the top of the society, okay? And this goes against the grain. I'm a lifelong progressive, but I have to face facts here. And the facts here, I believe, and again, criticize me, please, but I think the facts are that we have to rely on the capitalist class itself for our salvation here, okay? Not the capitalist class as a whole. I believe what is happening slowly and what we have to accelerate is a split within the ruling capitalist class. I believe and hope that there are a lot of rational capitalists out there who are becoming increasingly concerned that their personal and business interests are now being threatened. I think if this is instigated, if I can build a theory around that, then it may be possible over the next 5, 10, 15 years to split that class into those elements willing to consider a contractionary economy and those people, the oil industry, et cetera, who will likely remain expansionary. So I basically see as really the only hope, the only remaining strategic hope I see is a split within the capitalist class and then contractionists expelling, purging, so to speak, the expansionists, possibly compensating them. For instance, again, the oil industry, they're going to lose a lot of money in this. Why wouldn't we compensate those people? I mean, revenge at this point is futile. We want to salvage the biosphere, not exact revenge on people we don't like. So possibly we can compensate the expansionists, okay, sideline them, just the way we give CEOs a golden parachute to get out of the way, and then have these rational capitalists continue, you know, as the ruling class, but then conducting business not in an expansionary environment, but in a contractionary environment. And we would challenge them from below. Can you do this? Are you resilient and flexible and intelligent enough to conduct business in a contractionary environment? And I think that's a challenge that at least some of them may take up.
It's interesting that you're going this route. I've just run audio from the billionaire Michael Bloomberg and from former Treasury Secretary Robert Rubin and the current Treasury Secretary talking about climate change as a real threat to their business interests and that they should do something about it. So I think there's some room for what you're talking about, but it does seem counterintuitive to think that capitalists, who you have said are expansionists by definition, to then rearrange themselves to become contractionists and hopefully for them still make money out of it. It's a long reach. It's a desperate act.
Number one, let me correct you. I did not say that capitalists were expansionary. I said capitalism as a system was expansionary. Now, you're obviously correct that virtually all capitalists today are indeed expansionary. But that's partly because, again, there is no theory out there. There is no alternative contractionary capitalist type system that anybody has imagined for them to hold on to. You know, like everybody else, they need theory. They need a rational argument that is consistent with their interests and that leads them into a contractionary path. So I think one of the things that people like you and I and other thinkers on the left in the progressive world, among concerned humankind, what we should be doing is, in a sense, helping them out, producing that theory, encouraging them, instigating them, pressuring them, okay, giving them some way out. Because imagine how difficult it is. Let's say you are a capitalist, you understand, you're an intelligent person, you read the papers, you understand what's coming down the pike, the destruction of the biosphere, okay, and you're scared, but you are a capitalist. What you going to do? What's the way out? You know, for them, too, this is a real conundrum. It's not just us. It's them. They, too, have a real problem. Even if you have, you know, the best interests of your business and your family at heart, where are you going to go? So I think that my task for the rest of my life is going to be to create the theoretical underpinnings for what I call the conservative revolt. The revolt among not just capitalists, but conservatives generally. And by the way, there's a real history here which has been suppressed for a long time now, that conservatism originally, back in the days of Edmund Burke, French Revolution, prior to, you know, real capitalist expansion. So the conservatism that comes out of the feudal period is not pro-capitalist, it's anti-capitalist. It aims for humility, prudence, community, environmental stewardship, and a lot of other things that we agree with. And one of the things I'm trying to do in my new strategy is I'm trying to appeal to those traditional conservatives to come out of the woodwork and to pressure their expansionary colleagues to drop this expansionary destructive tack. This was, and certainly is now, a historical mistake. And I think traditional conservatives can help us in that task. It's not just progressives from below. It's also traditional conservatives within the ruling circles.
All right, now I'm going to offer a quick and probably ill-formed criticism right now, and that would be this, that historically it sounds like this idea is in danger of falling into what I would call the hero theory. Now, in the Middle Ages, the common person seeing many injustices often said to themselves, well, if only the king knew, I'm sure that he would change things. But in fact, the king knew and was part of the system. So for us to think that some billionaires are going to save us seems to relieve us also of the responsibility of going to the gas pumps and filling up our SUV, of doing all the things that we are doing personally, each one of us, to contribute to this problem.
I don't see the contradiction at all, Alex, not at all. We can keep doing what we're doing to try to minimize our impact on the planet, and we can provide this pressure, as I mentioned, on conservatives and capitalists to split into ecocidal and non-ecocidal factions. We can do all that. It's not one or the other at all. And this is not the king we're talking about, or a few billionaires, which, by the way, Naomi Klein does a good job of critiquing. She calls her chapter No Messiahs, and I agree with her. Michael Bloomberg is not going to save us. Richard Branson is not going to save us. I'm talking here about a sizable segment of the ruling class, the capitalist class, which understands, based on their interests, not the goodness of their hearts, but their personal and business interests, that ecocide is not favorable to them, that they must do something to salvage their wealth, their business, their influence, and of course their lives and the lives of their families. So I'm talking not about a king or a few messiah-like billionaires. Again, that's Naomi Klein's critique, but a sizable segment of the ruling class, which rationally, based again on their interest, splits off from the people who are leading them and everybody else to destruction. That is not such a stretch. The king thing is a stretch. Bloomberg and Branson, that's a stretch.
If Radio EcoShock listeners want to take part in this debate with you, how do they contact you?
There's contact information on my website, which, as you say, is contractionism.org. I would love to receive criticism. Again, I am planning my next book, which will likely be titled Conservative Revolt. I realize that this is a stretch for many readers. Listeners, it's a stretch for me, Alex. Again, I'm a lifelong progressive, and I want to see a bottom-up revolution, which will allow us to address social justice as well as sustainability. But I'm also a realist. I've got about 10 years left in my life, perhaps, and in that time, I want to do what is strategically rational. I want to find the right path for humankind to get beyond this ecological crisis. And I think we, all of us, have to make ourselves responsible for that solution. You know, we have to stop whining about the problem and how serious it is or how near it is, you know, near-term extinction and all that, and ask ourselves, what is the right strategy? And if Frank is wrong, then what is the right strategy? So don't just criticize me, okay? Write me, again, at the contact information on the website, and tell me what the alternative is. We have to start thinking strategically. How do we get out of this mess?
From British Columbia, Canada, we've been talking with Frank Rotering. He's an independent thinker, as you see, developing an economic theory based on the contraction of the world's economy. You can find out more at his website, contractionism.org. Frank, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Alex.
It's been great. I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.